and welcome to another episode of Earth 911's Sustainability in Your Ear, the podcast conversation with a changemaker working to accelerate the transition to a sustainable carbon-neutral society. I'm your host, Mitch Ratcliffe. Today's topic is CO2, carbon dioxide. We've got too much of it in the atmosphere, almost twice as much on a percentage basis than before we started burning coal and oil to produce energy and run factories. We're going to get into some of the complicated details of how carbon markets, carbon credits, and carbon allowances work today with Jason Grant, Chief Operating Officer of Climate Vault. It's a nonprofit that purchases and manages carbon allowances and credits to support carbon capture and sequestration technologies that can help draw down the more than 1 trillion tons of CO2 emitted by humans during the industrial era. Jason is also joined today by Sanjay Srivastava. He is the Chief Digital Strategies Officer at Genpact, which is a digital services firm that's partnered with Climate Vault to launch a scalable carbon management platform for large organizations. In other words, they help companies manage and reduce their CO2, as well as monetize the reductions that they're able to achieve. Climate Vault was named a world-changing idea for 2022 by the business magazine Fast Company. The key to Climate Vault's approach is understanding the difference between a carbon allowance, which is essentially a carbon budget that can be broken down into scalable units of permitted emissions. In other words, maybe the government tells you you can burn this much CO2 this year. And the other side of that difference is the carbon credit, which can be sold to another organization or individual to offset their emissions. Carbon allowances let you emit, for example, 1 ton of CO2 within an overall carbon budget. If the allowance goes unused, the resulting savings can be retired or sold. And that's where Climate Vault comes into the picture. They buy carbon allowances and retire them to prevent emissions, as well as turn that avoided emissions into value that can be applied to support carbon capture and sequestration technology development. In other words, one carbon allowance can be used to both retire CO2 and fund the tools that will eventually remove more CO2 in the future. We'll get into the details with our guests, because there's a lot to unpack here. You'll learn more about Genpact at Genpact, which is spelled G-E-N-P-A-C-T, at genpact.com, and about Climate Vault at climatevault.org. Climate Vault is all one word, no dash, no space, climatevault.org. Welcome to the show, Jason and Sanjay. How are you all doing today?
Very well. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
Well, first, I wanted to start with you, Jason. Can you walk us through the Climate Vault process? And basically, what I'm asking is, how does a carbon allowance of a carbon budget become an offset that can also provide funding for future carbon removal projects? It sounds like you're getting more than 1 + 1 = 2. It sounds like 1 + 1 = 3.
Mitch, that's a really great question. When the founders of Climate Vault got together, which was a group of business leaders and industry experts, and they looked out at the current supply of carbon offsets, they basically saw two major problems. One is that although the supply side is growing and it's getting larger through the voluntary carbon market, it's not verifiable. You can't be sure that any funding you put into that market actually results in a ton of action at 1 ton of carbon removed from the atmosphere. So the supply side, although growing and well-intentioned, doesn't actually meet the need that what we need to actually mitigate the worst effects of climate change. The other side of that problem that they looked at was the fact that even if we stopped emissions right now and we stopped putting more carbon into the atmosphere, we still have a real problem on our hands. And that problem is that the carbon that's already in the atmosphere is up there. We're very focused on carbon. Carbon has a very long atmospheric life. It's staying there. It's heating the atmosphere. And really, to reduce and mitigate the worst effects of climate change, we need to pull that carbon back out. So they said, okay, how can we have a solution that actually has a carbon dioxide removal component? Mm-hmm. Looking around at their various sets of expertise, they said, hey, you know what? We're underutilizing the compliance markets. The compliance markets are different than the voluntary market in that they're government regulated, they're very large scale, they're about 50 times larger in total volume than the voluntary carbon market, and you can basically ride on government regulation to ensure that if you buy a single carbon allowance, you're actually having a 1 ton carbon effect. So that's a great way for people to actually have a reduction immediately. But we took it a step further. We said, well, now that we have this asset, which is the carbon allowance, we can use that as a way to catalyze carbon dioxide removal technologies. So basically, we take that asset and we go out to the market, as we're doing right now, and we're searching for carbon dioxide removal companies that we can provide a grant to and help fund and scale their operations. Now, to your original question, how does one plus one become three? Basically, if I'm a business and I'm under stakeholder pressure from my employees, from my shareholders, and from my consumers to take action on the climate crisis, which a lot of organizations are doing that we've seen in our experience, and they're largely doing that because there's been a void of government action. And I look out to the market, Climate Vault basically provides an innovative two-step removal and reduction process that allows you to first have an immediate reduction and then have basically, if you will, a way to take that value that you've invested and catalyze carbon dioxide removal.
So must a government set the carbon allowances, or is this something that could potentially transition to a voluntary process where everybody puts together a collective carbon budget and then splits it up and allocates it for use?
You know, I'm not going to speculate on what the best format of it is going forward. What I do know right now is the voluntary carbon market, again, while we think it's well-intentioned and we do believe there are projects there that are worthwhile, the lack of regulation, the lack of standardization, and the lack of agreement makes it so that if I'm an organization looking to actually take action on climate and I'm using the voluntary carbon market, I can't be sure that my basically investment in that market is having the effect. Now, in the future, perhaps government, there might be an alternative to government regulation, but right now we see the compliance markets that are run by the government is the best choice for individuals and organizations wanting to have a verifiable immediate reduction leading to a removal.
Well, so tracking is critically important to this. And Sanjay, Genpact is a technology services company. Tell us about your role in this cumulative solution and how you're providing carbon tracking for the enterprise.
Mitch, you know, we are a digital transformation focused professional services firm. We serve the Fortune 500. We, you know, a third of the Fortune 300 are clients of ours, and we've served them in deep and complex business processes over almost a decade plus now in most cases. And so our sort of approach to this on the business side, obviously, we all have very strong individual thoughts on this. But if I think about the company as a whole, you know, we serve CIOs and CTOs and technology leaders in large global corporations. And I think I'm seeing two things happen there now in the last few years. There's a move to go away from the reactive reporting deadline baselining effort, which is a lot of data engineering. It's lots of pulling data from different places and harmonizing it and normalizing it and wrangling it into something that makes sense and be able to be something you can use, to really now trying to get a little bit more proactive. This is, you know, climate change at the end, you know, from my lens, is actually about a lens of data and a lens of change management. And the CIOs and the CTOs are in a great position to drive that. And I'm starting to see a real shift in the mindset where most of the executives we serve are sort of trying to get into the front seat of this and saying, listen, just reporting and reacting isn't enough, that we need to get in the front of this problem and really help address that. And so we're seeing this across the businesses we serve. And I think the idea of finding an opportunity to do this 1-2 punch, as Jason described, the idea of reduction, but really leading to removal, and also do it in a much more verifiable, trusted fashion, I think has become really central. And so that's how we got involved in it.
Well, I think you're raising a really important point. ESG reporting is often just portrayed as a burden. And in fact, ESG data can be used as part of the not just digital transformation, but the sustainable transformation of the company. How do you recommend your customers use that data to rethink their business processes?
I think, Mitch, there's been a real journey that's happened here towards trust. There's been a certain amount of greenwashing that's come through in many of the reports that that we see. And as a result, and that's been realized and recognized, and as a result, there's been a little bit of a I would say, concern around how do we make sure that when we say we do something, that it's actually truly done. Mm-hmm. This verifiability is key, and key to verifiability is transparency and the audits, and then being able to share that. And so I actually think that the journey for most enterprises rightfully started with reporting and getting a baseline, because if you don't know where you are, you can't even get started, right? But the next step really is this step of actually reduction, and more importantly, a path to removal. Not all of those technologies are here today, but being able to set the environment economically and technically for the innovation to happen is key to what we're doing here.
Do you also find that companies are motivated by the opportunity to monetize their reductions, or is that a secondary benefit?
Yeah, look, I think I might have a very biased view in the context of the fact that we serve only the Fortune 500 in their global efforts. I'd say for most of the companies we serve, the primary objective is really decarbonization and really getting to be more thoughtful about this. And, you know, I'll give you an example. This isn't about just one thing or the other. Power, energy itself is becoming an issue, right? If you think about, you look at Microsoft's most recent quarterly earnings they just filed, they took an $800 million charge to offset increased energy costs. And the reality is, with the decarbonization of the grid, and then also with the fact that in the end, energy is very difficult to transport and store. And so we just don't have the infrastructure, even if we produce more electricity, which we aren't, to be able to do that. And so this is a real issue for large company CIOs, because it's directly contributing to their costs as the energy costs go up. It's directly contributing to the shareholders' views of what the company is doing and its purpose going forward. And it's a big part of how they work with their customers, their employees, and their partners, and having a stand on it. And so I think this is becoming super important for CIOs.
Yeah, that transparency is the basis for making having the conversation with your employees about your values. It's going to be critically important to retaining them, as well as working with consumers. Jason, you mentioned your founding group, which is, let's just say it, it's august. You have the former Secretary of Energy. You have Ron Rivest, who was one of the co-inventors of public key cryptography, and a lot of former government officials. But you're a nonprofit. Why is the nonprofit structure the right approach for being a market facilitator like Climate Vault is?
That's a great question, Mitch. So as we looked to form this organization, we really looked at what would have the biggest benefit. So we're very focused on carbon. We're very focused on getting the tons. And the not-for-profit structure basically allows us to leverage the compliance markets and then catalyze the CVR. When we go speak to our corporate partners, they really like that model. There's a couple of advantages for them. But also, it kind of gets away from any of the suspicion that we're, as carbon prices increase, which they may or may not, but everybody would generally think they would, that actually we're taking that benefit, that increase in value, and putting it right into the funding CDR. And the not-for-profit vehicle really helps us with that side of things.
And what are some of the projects, the carbon sequestration technology projects that you're working with today?
That's a great question. So when you think of carbon dioxide removal, everybody thinks and has a picture in their mind of a direct air capture machine, you know, all the little fans. And that's a great project going on in Iceland, and it's removing carbon. But the volume of tons it's removed at the price point is small and very expensive. So we're in our RFP process, we're basically looking at all of the pathways that are available that we can verify. So this is terrestrial, it is ocean, mineralization, any of those, and even building materials. And so the projects we've got in actually cross all of those pathways. And we're seeing them come in at a price point where we'll actually be able, we feel we'll be able to very soon in our search, find carbon dioxide removal technologies we can actually help support.
You know, we've had guests on from, for instance, the Carbon X Prize. Are those potentially interesting sources of technology partners?
They could be sources of interesting technology partners, and we love the fact that the X Prize is there. If I'm an organization that's looking out to future-proof my business right now, and I'm looking for somewhere that I can put my money, if I put it into any kind of economic fund, I'm actually storing that just as money, like XPRIZE is right now. And it's not a negative comment at all. With Climate Vault, using the compliance markets, we're actually storing that value as an immediate reduction that you can count on to achieve carbon neutrality. So this, again, Sanjay mentioned it, the 1-2 punch, have an immediate reduction and then have basically a first line, first place line position for carbon dioxide removal.
This is a great conversation. I want to take a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back. We're back to continue the conversation with Jason Grant of Climate Vault and Genpact's Sanjay Srivastava about their partnership to measure and manage CO2. So I want to ask both of you, based on what you're seeing, and this is in response to a lot of comments we get from our readers that question whether or not there really is anything happening other than talk. What real examples of change are you seeing that you can point to where there is the kind of transparency that you mentioned, Sanjay?
I think, Mitch, the key to getting this to be successful in the end comes down to three things. It comes down to scale, it comes down mm-hmm. to access, and it comes down to trust. And I'll just take you through each of them. And that's where we're seeing so much great work happen, both in our own teams together with Jason's and ours, but also I think the world over. I think scale is important because look, at the end of the day, what you're doing is we're living in a very digital economy and there's lots of transactions happening all over the place. Being at the right place and being able to take those micro payments, those micro adjustments, and being able to aggregate it to match the pricing of what's happening in the markets and to be able to make that equation hold. It's almost like a banking system. You actually have to think about it really at a scale and build it for scale so that you can kind of address the needs. The trust component is also super important. It's to the point you just raised, right? Unless we're able to actually track every single piece of transaction, every dollar that flows through the system, exactly to what it is, what it did, what audited, verifiable results it contributed to, you know, you're just propagating sort of a lot more greenwashing. And so for us, it's been very critical to sort of design a mechanism that allows you to be able to sort of say, listen, I put this in, and as a result of this, I know I got that, or the world got that. And that's trust. And that's actually about data and data engineering and connecting and bringing it through and being able to, you know, connect the dots and making that happen. And then I think access. Look, the reality is we are in a digital economy. I'll wake up in the morning, I'll go to the coffee store, I'll buy a cup of coffee, I'll come to work, I'll spend 2 hours on a Zoom like the one I'm on right now, and then I'll do something else. And we're just moving through our day with so many different inflection points where carbon intersects with what we do. And I want to have the ability when I go to the barista and pick my cup of coffee that at the counter when I'm paying for my coffee, I want to be able to pay that 4 cents in addition to be able to offset or to be able to take to address the carbon that was involved in that cup that I'm now going to drink. And to be able to make that access happen, and we are in a global digitized economy, you have to have the APIs and the connections and the interconnectivity and the systems that can kind of bring all that together. Because that experience at the consumer level in the coffee shop, you got the coffee in your hand and a credit card in the other, has to be seamless. It can't be the sort of thing where you have making a mental note, coming back and doing something about it. So our view is we address three things. We address this whole idea of scale and get it right from the foundation up. If you think about trust in a very deep and meaningful way and be able to connect the dots that people can actually correlate to actual results. And if you provide the access in the stream of work at the point of inflection right then and there. And I think this makes a very meaningful idea. And that's kind of where we've been focusing on. And look, I spend all my time with CIOs and CTOs of large global corporations. The thing I consistently hear from them is the following, which is carbon's super important. You know, we have to focus on real things that drive real results. And we have to be able to do it at scale, transparently, and with the right access.
And Jason, why don't you won the world-changing idea award in 2022 from Fast Company. That must have unleashed a lot of calls. Are you seeing some really interesting new options or partners emerging in the corporate world?
Mitch, we are. We're seeing that did unlock a great segment of the market, and we're seeing a lot of interest there. And actually, that was the lead into our partnership with Genpact. And if I were just building on what Sanjay was saying, Climate Vault's bringing to the table a verifiable reduction and removal process. You know, our tenants are on transparency, verifiability, market-based, all of the things that need to go in, and it seemed to be a little bit nascent in the other market. And in our partnership with Genpact, you know, we're really getting that access and that transparency so that as we talk to these companies that are coming to us, especially from Fast Company, and they say, hey, we're under a lot of pressure to make sure that our business is being reactive to the climate crisis. We need to make sure it's integrated into all our processes. And the Climate Vault Genpact process is basically taking that verifiability from Climate Vault and the technology expertise from Genpact and making that available to them so that they can react to their stakeholders and also ensure that they're growing their share of malls and share of market because they are a climate conscious company.
Now, Sanjay mentioned the idea of paying for an offset or addressing the carbon when you purchase a cup of coffee. Do you see these companies starting to work to express carbon impact to their consumers, or are they primarily at this point focused on internal management and reduction as well as monetization?
You know, we're really seeing it in four ways right now. So when Climate Vault was in its infancy, we would see it as their internal operations. We would also see it as, and the ESG, the E part for portfolios. If I have a large investment, they would come to us and say, hey, the exclusionary investment practices in ESG aren't what I want. I want to make sure that my portfolio is carbon neutral. And Climate Vault helps with that. Two trends that have come up, especially in, I'd say, last 8 months. One is employee engagement. Mm-hmm. All organizations are looking for ways to attract talent and maintain talent, and actually having a part of their offering to their employees be having carbon neutrality for their personal lives. T. Rowe Price actually is somebody we're working with to do this. Mm-hmm. They're finding that a big benefit. It's something they can talk about with their stakeholders, and it's reacting to that specific need. And then the fourth thing is organizations are coming to us and they're saying, hey, not only do we want to have our corporate activities carbon neutral, we want to make sure that all the services that we're offering to our customers are carbon neutral as well. And this is where the partnership with Genpact and the API access they're giving us, the data, the AI, the analytics, is basically allowing us to say, hey, we have a solution for you. We have a way that you can integrate your operational systems to make sure that you can make each of your transactions with your customers actually a carbon neutral experience. And that's growing. We're having a lot more of those conversations, especially in the last 6 to 8 months.
Now, you raised the ESG reporting issue generally, but ESG is being criticized by a lot of people. My feeling is it's largely because it's successful, but you're hitting on an important point, which is how do we translate that into the stories we tell about our reductions to consumers, to employees? We're in an inflection point. Have we given ESG enough time to evolve before we start trying to damn it, for instance?
You know, we look at that and there's obviously a negative side to all stories. And there's a lot of politicking going on around that. We need to do everything as a society, as a people. We need to do all of these things. We need to reduce our emissions. We need to be the catalyst for reductions. No one solution is going to solve this. I think what Sanjay was saying earlier is just a basic tenet of any business. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And starting that ESG management, getting that in place, getting some regulation around that and some standardization so that there's trust and there's a overarching body, such as the SEC regulations that are being contemplated. We see those as all positive moves. At this point, the climate crisis is so large, there's nothing we're going to say that, oh, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be improving. We should be continuously improving all aspects from the reporting to the reductions and certainly catalysts for the removals. But all of these things need to happen if we're going to have positive change. And we support all forward actions, especially when it comes to providing clarity, transparency, and verifiability in the reporting, in the removals, and in the reductions.
Sanjay, in terms of reporting and sharing with your employees, which we believe is the very first thing these organizations need to do, what is Genpact's technology platform and advice for your customers with regard to doing that? Can an employee sit down and go, what's my carbon footprint today with regard to their work?
It's a great point you raised, Mitch. Look, the little known secret about big data, and we all talk about big data all day long, but the little known secret about big data is that it's very messy data. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we're talking about data that's coming from different sources. They're disparate, they're disconnected, they're always in different forms, many not really clean. And the effort to sort of pull them together to ingest it in sort of more in a technical sense, but to pull them together to be able to harmonize it, to normalize it, to take out the outliers and really be able to get it to a point where you're truly and properly baselining is a very difficult journey. We've been helping large corporations do this for a while now. And for us, I think the key to success has been data and artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. The piece about data that I think is becoming super interesting is we, for the first time now, have the ability to actually bring lots of data together, big data, obviously a big word, through the cloud-based infrastructure that the world is now starting to see. But just even more importantly than that is there's a new set of toolkits and technologies that allow you to introspect the data. And so if I am, you know, certainly a technologist or a corporation, I can go and slice and dice the data in a way that I couldn't 5 years ago. And that's making a meaningful change. And artificial intelligence is really key because the reality is oftentimes, you know, A, you've got a size problem that you can't mm-hmm. really manually tackle. And B, much of this is unstructured. They're sitting in PDF files and some, you know, written documents and yep. other reports. And to be able to really extract the data from that information or the meaningful sort of highlights from there is a very manual process if you don't use artificial intelligence. And so for us, I think the key has been applying, you know, a foundation of data, which is obviously what we do in our day-to-day job, and then artificial intelligence technologies to be able to pull it together. But once you do that, you have the right foundation of data, you know, the transition is night to day, right? You can introspect it, you can slice it, you can understand which businesses, which different units, which business operations you want to focus on. And then you can start thinking about how do we mesh this with what Climate Vault is doing to be able to really decarbonize that and then put yourself in a path to, you know, a low carbon economy. This transition to the low carbon economy, in my mind, is one of the three largest transformations that I see happening right now in the world. We see happening in the world at Genpact. And it's key and high in people's minds, notwithstanding everything you said about ESG being a little bit of a hot potato, et cetera. But, you know, that's at the global kind of high-level aggregated media level. When you go in and talk to CEOs and boards and CIOs and CTOs, that's not the picture I see at all. I see a real commitment to a low-carbon economy and a real desire to find measurable, verifiable, trusted ways to getting there.
I'm going to get very geeky for a moment, but the analogy for me is to the internet protocol stack, which was invented in 1969, fleshed out over the next 24 years. Then the web took off. And then the stack, which is layers of technology, became immensely complex, but also standardized. And so everything started to work together better. Your point, because we deal with this problem with the recycling database at Earth911 all the time, is the data is all over the place and it's unstructured in the sense that it is represented differently and described differently. AI could accelerate this. Is your sense that we can do what we did with the internet protocol with the protocols around ESG 10 times as fast as we did it in the past because of AI?
It's happening already, Mitch. I mean, if you just kind of look at the, if you boil down, look at the work that Climate Vault is doing as an example, and I'm just going to take your HTTP analogy one step further. So think about if you had to actually build, let's just say an e-commerce website back in the day with HTTP, you're starting with a low-level protocol. You're actually aggregating all the data connections. You're actually building not just the APIs, but the actual connections. You're actually putting the entire infrastructure together. It was a ton of work, right? In much the same way, those protocols, those underlying toolkits, those individual sequestering or carbon decarbonization efforts, they're available in the world, but it's a real hard mechanism of sourcing, finding, verifying, auditing, and pulling it together into a platform. So it's this movement from, you know, the early days of HTTP to what we think is a full-fledged Web2 environment. Today, if you want to go out and build an e-commerce site, you start with something that's aggregated much higher level to continue the geeky analogy. And that abstraction allows you to be able to do things faster and quicker and, you know, in a time-to-market fashion. And it's really the work that Jason and his team are doing and we're working together on, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to take lots of different things that are going on. We're curating and picking the things that make sense, that are verifiable as it relates to the allowances market, and that actually are then be able to transform into this reduction and sequestering capability. We provide price signals, by the way, to the innovation marketplace. It's something Jason didn't mention, but it's one of the things that he's talked about that I'm a big believer in, because I used to be an entrepreneur. I was a startup CEO a few times over. And the reality is, in the innovation You go down to Sandhill, in the innovation business, right? You need a price signal for technologies to be invested in so they can be built out. And so we're doing some really important things, not only for companies today, because we're giving them a verifiable, you know, 1-2-step punch of, you know, both reduction and removal, but even more broadly in the industry, we're providing a price signal for new innovation technologies that are coming through that I think is going to accelerate because now they have, you know, to use Jason's reference, an RFP. You know, that is a real solid document. And it says, if you do this and I can verify that, then this is the price we will pay and we'll get it done this way. That's in black and white. And that changes the whole ecosystem.
Because now everything is visible. And this, I think, is the critical point that we are able to measure everything, which is an expanding bubble all the time, and then articulate it in a meaningful way. So, Jason, the question that logically follows from that is, what other types of organizations are you talking with besides companies? Because government is a huge source of CO2. There was a great piece in Nature yesterday about the military and its impact, which most people never even bother to think about. So can cities and governments and institutions like the military tap into what Climate Vault is doing to begin to manage their CO2 as well?
Absolutely. We're seeing demand across the board in all industries and all sectors. So if I look at some of our existing partnerships, Vanderbilt University was the first R1 university to go carbon neutral. Their original plan was to do it in 2035, I believe. Mm-hmm. Through Climate Vault, for the last 2 years, they've achieved carbon neutrality. And they did it in 2021. They were able to do that right now. And so we're seeing more and more interest in the university sector. Towns and cities, you mentioned, we're in conversations right now with two different municipalities to do exactly this. And they're trying to figure out how they're going to be seen by their local constituents as being strong on climate. And they're starting to work with ESPE because they see that we can provide them a transparent, verifiable path that they can actually do that and report back to their constituents.
I want to thank you both for spending time with me today. Last question, which is, where can our listeners track your progress? This is a complex story. Can they see a running count of the emissions avoided, carbon removal projects funded? How do they keep track of what you're doing?
You can visit us on climatevault.org. And we're, of course, on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and Facebook at ClimateVault. And if you reach out to me personally on LinkedIn, I'm always available and always ready to take those conversations and have those conversations.
And what about a counter? Is there going to be a counter on the site?
Mitch, I have to tell you a funny story. One of our founders, Michael Greenstone, asks me every second day when our website is going to have a counter. I have promised him that we are launching a new website and it will have a counter. So I expect that up there very soon.
Well, it'll be good to keep track of what you're doing.
Thanks, Mitch.
We've been speaking with Jason Grant, Chief Operating Officer of the nonprofit Climate Vault, which purchases and manages carbon allowances and credits to provide financial support for carbon capture and sequestration technologies, and Sanjay Srivastava, Chief Digital Strategies Officer at Genpact, a digital services firm. They've partnered to develop a carbon management platform for large organizations. You'll have to forgive me for getting kind of geeky during this conversation, but the analogy between the progress towards sustainable economies to the evolution of the digital world that we live in today is essential to seeing that a carbon transition is possible. In fact, digitization provides the basis for the measurement and management of CO2 because it's invisible to the naked eye while being deeply impactful to our environment and the potential survival of our species. People need to see the data in order to understand what they need to change. And of course, a lot of us need to be convinced that there's a change necessary, but that movement is growing. In many ways, we would not have been even remotely prepared to respond to the climate crisis if we'd not dug the existential hole we find ourselves in today. So now, as we collect all that disparate data that Sanjay described, we have the opportunity to measure and manage our emissions, as well as develop standards and new regulations that will put us on a path to a net zero and ultimately carbon positive way of living. But make no mistake, folks, there is a lot of work and a lot of misunderstandings that will need to be negotiated ahead of us. I hope you take a few minutes to share this show and all the others that we've done with your friends, family, neighbors, coworkers. Tell your boss they need to get on the horse and start riding towards carbon neutrality. You all are the amplifier that spreads the ideas that we collect here on Sustainability in Your Ear. So please let folks know. They can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible or any of the other places that they go looking for podcast goodness. We appreciate your support, and I thank you personally. I'm Mitch Ratcliffe. We'll be back with another innovator interview soon. In the meantime, folks, take care of yourself, take care of one another, and let's all take care of this beautiful planet of ours. Have a green day.